welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's yesteryear. Mark Levonier, your host for an hour of crime shows. Later on, Gangbusters from 1947, but first a broadcast of crime classics called The Shrapneled Body of Charles Drew Sr., heard on CBS on July 6, 1953.
Good evening. This is Crime Classics. I am Thomas Highland. I'm going to tell you another true crime story. Listen. The sound you hear is that of a man having his right-hand hook filed. It's Saturday night in London town, and he wants to be gleaming and presentable. The year is 1739, when a well-sharpened hook in London town was considered prudent. And Captain Ratt, that's R-A-T-T, besides being a drunkard, a scoundrel, and a smuggler, was a prudent man. The young man handling the file is named Charles Drew, Jr., and he is performing this intimate little ironmongery because he needs a favor done. Captain Ratt can help him out. He can supply the youngster with an alibi. And Junior badly needs one, for he has just shot his father dead. And tonight, my report to you on the shrapneled body of Charles Drew, Sr.
Crime Classics, a new series of true crime stories taken from the records and newspapers of every land, from every time. Your host each week, Mr. Thomas Highland, connoisseur of crime, student of violence, and teller of murders. Now, once again, Mr. Thomas Highland.
The year, as I've told you, is 1739, and the place? Long Melford in the county of Suffolk. Long Melford was a small, quiet town near London, and in it, a manor. And in the manor, a high-vaulted room of roaring fire, great shadows, and flying buttresses. Directly beneath the buttress that flew toward the west, two men, father, son, Charles Drew Sr., Jr.
Son?
Yes, father?
The time has come for you and I to have a talk.
I'm grateful. There are things vexing me.
Perhaps what I have to tell you will answer your vexation.
I'm very fortunate.
I've tried to be a good father.
A most excellent father. There's no one richer than you in Long Melford.
It is what I want to talk with you about.
I know.
I've drawn my latest will. This.
What a gentle and most excellent father I have. Have you ear to what they say of you in the square?
No, what do they say?
That you are gentle and most excellent. What of the will?
I'm leaving everything to your five sisters. And to you, sixpence. To lend, to spend, to start your fortune.
But the last will, the one before this, you left me everything. And only a kind word to my five sisters.
That was when you were 11. Now you are 19.
And a good son.
To whom good?
To you good.
Nay. To the cutthroats and smugglers with whom you cousins.
It is not so.
This is so, I know it. You consort with people of ill fame. And also with Mr. Richardson's housekeeper.
Shall I explain this of Mr. Richardson's housekeeper to you?
T'would be well.
She is a most excellent housekeeper, and I wish to employ her for our own household.
And this you have been trying to do for the last year.
Oh, she demands high payment.
Our family can afford high payment.
But I personally cannot, Father. Not until I inherit your fortune.
And which with this new will never be.
Father.
I don't scare, son. Wave that gun or...
Thank you. A smattering of intelligence concerning 1739 ballistics. Ammunition was chiefly of two types, round or irregular. The former was manufactured by dropping chunks of molten lead from a great height, and when it reached the vat of water at the bottom of flight, it was round, due to centrifugal forces and gravity. Among men who puttered with this sort of thing, round shot was considered pretty fancy. Mostly, guns were loaded in this era by whatever iron junk was to hand. It should be recorded that Charles Drew Jr. had stopped at a small junkyard on his way to talk with his dad. This is the reason the coroner found numerous pieces of irregular junk iron in Dad's corpse. Let's see what Dad's son is up to now. Scene, Ye Old Bunnery, a rundown bake shop on Abernathy Lane. The time, 2 hours later. Principals, Charles Drew Jr. and a Mr. Humphrey, bun baker.
That brings you to Ye Old Bunnery, Charlie.
I want to know a thing.
And that is what?
Humphrey, how would you like £100?
You ever saying £100?
All you must do is say you killed a man.
I killed a man. My £100, please.
You must say you killed my father.
I killed your father. My £100.
To the police.
Charlie.
£200 now, and £200 after you've been to the police.
You killed your poor old dad, Charlie.
With this pistol.
Leave you to be a very rich man.
If someone were to go to the police and said he killed my father, he would be rich too.
With his neck in the gibbet.
I would guarantee that the man would be released. Inside of a week, he would be released. There are jailers who would release such a man, persuaded correctly, with enough money.
A guarantee, I know a guarantee. Write me a confession that you killed your poor dear old dad. I will hide it. I will go to the police and confess the deed. If I'm still in jail in a week, I will tell the jailer there to find your confession.
Wrap me up a half a dozen of your excellent buns, Humphrey, and I will give you £200, plus the price of them.
Thereupon, Humphrey plucked a quill from his favorite goose in the back goose coop, sharpened it, and presented it to Charlie. With it, the lad wrote out his confession, paid up, and left. Humphrey waited for his wife, got permission to leave the shop, stopped at his house for a moment, then walked into the local constabulary and made history with this statement.
If you boys are looking for a corpus, try 26 Bloom Street. If you're wondering what his name is, it's Charles Drew Sr. If you're wondering who did the murder on him, it's me. And my name is Humphrey.
The police, upon arriving at the appropriate room at 26 Bloom Street, understood immediately that foul play had been done. One of the constables was assigned to look in on the household of Mr. Humphrey, and there saw the Humphrey children at play at Thistle-de-Doo, a game usually played with marbles, but by the Humphrey children, played with pieces of iron junk, which latter were of a size that could easily be rammed down the muzzle of a gun. The gun was there, too, under a pillow on Mr. Humphrey's side of the bed. Mrs. Humphrey, who in the meanwhile had returned home, shook her head philosophically when apprised of the situation. It is recorded that Mrs. Humphrey's parents had both been put away as confirmed smugglers, a felony against the crown. The next day, in jail...
Nice of you to visit me, Charlie.
Yes.
What news do you bring? When am I to be released?
I went to see Sir Roger Firebrace.
Oh, how is Sir Roger?
Dead. It is a pity, too, for he would have gotten your release in an ounce for a few £100.
Don't forget, laddie, I've got your confession. You've got till Sunday.
The youngster, however, knew another man of note, Sir Chauncey Fenwick. Sir Chauncey was compassionate and understood the situation exactly, but unfortunately had just had one of his periodic fallings out with the magistrate's wife. But Sir Chauncey did not send the lad away empty-handed. He suggested an old sea dog named Captain Rat, with two T's.
What's the file, Mr. Drew? You'll be missing me hook and be scraping my wrist.
I'm very sorry, Captain Rat.
Nervous, ain't you?
But I travelled here to London to talk to you.
Yeah, you see, Sir Fenwick sent you to me.
Sir Fenwick took £500 and said he could do nothing with it. You're my last resort, Captain Rat.
A wee bit, dear, Mr. Drew. Aye. No. What can old Captain Rat do for you?
Do you have any influential friends?
What be you needing?
An alibi.
For yourself?
For a friend.
Aye. 'Tis always for a friend. What about him?
He confesses he killed my father.
And he be your friend?
By killing my father, he made me rich. I bear him no malice.
And for him, you want an alibi. Why? Why not let him rot? Why, sonny?
You see...
You kill your daddy, sonny?
Keep the hook, Captain. You almost stuck me.
Pardon, young gentleman. An alibi you want, is it? For a friend. To say what?
That my friend is making a mistake. That he is having hallucinations. That he did not kill my father because he was with you the night my father died.
And where, Mr. Drew, will that leave you?
Oh, since one has confessed to the crime, it is doubtful whether I would be charged with it.
A sly one. Bein't you a sly one, young gentleman? Bein't you?
Oh.
I'll travel down to the jail with you and have a talk with your friend. How's that, huh?
Very good.
I'll need £500 for expenses.
Oh, yes.
Now?
Yes.
That is wasting a Saturday night and all, coming down here to the dungeon speaking to you, Mr. Humphrey. But I don't mind.
And you're going to furnish me an alibi, Captain?
This be a strange one.
I explained it all to you, Captain.
You kill your dad. This one here says he done it. Now the both of you want me to say he couldn't have done it because he was with me.
That lad thought it up. He's the bright one, not me.
My plan will work. By the time you get Humphrey out of here and the police begin to dig about again, I'll be in Paris, lost. I will change my name, and with my fortune I can...
For your fortune, I will do it.
I gave you £500.
Bah, the pittance. Your fortune, Mr. Drew.
Except what he's promised to me.
What about it, lad?
No.
Bah. Taylor! Pleasant talking to both of you.
It's Saturday night, Charlie. What will you do? It's Saturday night, Charlie. I've got your confession hidden away. And tomorrow's Sunday. What will you do?
And they looked at each other there in the dungeon, the jailed and the young visitor. And the question hung there. What would Charlie do?
It's Saturday night, and tomorrow is Sunday. What will you do, Charlie?
Listening to Crime Classics and your host, Thomas Highland, and his report to you on the shrapneled body of Charles Drew Sr.
It's a short, dusty road from Long Melford to London. Not only that, but these days it's hard to find. In its day, however, it was remarkable for two things. The brothers' shoe spooner, Dick and Harry, who embarked on a career of highwaymanship on the morn of June 3, 1735, were hung on the eve of that same day from the highest branch of an elm at a fork on Long Melford Road. The other historic feature of Long Melford Road is the fact
that on a Sunday morning, a young murderer, Charles Drew Jr., and his lady love rode a coach down its ruts.
Oh, he's a ranting, roving lad. He is a brisk and a bonny lad. Betide what may, I will be wed and follow the boy with the white cockade.
Liz.
What is it, dearie?
Shut up.
Everyone's singing that song, dearie. It's the rage.
Please, shut up.
Oh, Duck, what's the matter?
You're the cause of it all.
Of what all, Duck?
My killing my father.
You wanted a way to have all his money? I told you a way to do, that's all.
Yes.
Oh, Duck, dearie. You'll see when we get to London what a time I'll show you. Make you forget.
Since I've killed him, I've done everything wrong.
Will you listen to Liz again? Will you?
Surely I'll listen, Poodle.
Oh, Duck.
Monkey.
Will you listen to Liz?
Surely.
When we get to London, we change your name, and you forget about Humphrey.
But if I don't get him out of jail tonight, he'll show the police my confession.
But you'll be in London. Start forgetting about him right now.
All right.
And so they fled to London town, little knowing that they had made a road famous. In London, they located a little-known hideaway called Bonhomme Carter's Thorny Bull Inn, on the corner of Asquith and Chiswick. The lad registered under an alias, Thomas Roberts. Liz, however, registered in her own name, Elizabeth Bathall. As this was going on, back in Long Melford Jail, where Mr. Humphrey was, there transpired this.
In 1 hour, Varthy, I'm getting out of here.
You be a fool.
How, a fool?
Where'd you ever have so much money?
What bun are you baking, wifey?
This bun. The lad's given you money, all that money, and he's good for more.
Aye.
All we want.
He's a rich one, that's true.
Well, we can get more money before you show his confession.
How? You said he fled.
His Liz told me they were off to London town. You could write him a letter and say as long as he paid you £20 a day, you'd be willing to stay where you are.
£20 a day? That's a robbery.
I will go to London and find Master Drew and present him with the letter.
How will you find him?
I'll ask you in a bath of him.
London, eh, Barton?
London.
What of the children?
Mrs. Nickelrod says she will take care of them.
And you, alone in London?
So Mrs. Humphrey went to London. A few observations about Mrs. Humphrey. Wash away the flour and the excess dough. Put on long sleeves to hide the muscles made prominent from kneading bun dough. Comb the hair, exchange shoes for boots, and Gertrude Humphrey was rather presentable. When she went to London, Mrs. Humphrey did all of these things, plus making a mental note not to laugh too much, not only because of the horrible sound she made, but also because of the mischievous twitch it brought on, which she could not control. So, off she went to this place, to that, to this pub, to that, asking for a Mr. Drew. I should like to comment here that in 1739 the gin was of an excellent Holland distillation. However, its chemistry had a peculiar reaction with Gertrude Humphrey. Though she fought it, and though she laughed not at the most hilarious joke, including the historically famous one about Lady Mumbly and the Troubadour, the gin caused her to twitch mischievously. This attracted to her London dandies, who plied her with more Holland gin, and who promised her help in finding Mr. Drew, and who never did. But Gertrude never lost sight of her mission, and one night in a pub in Covent Garden...
Mister, mister...
What's your pleasure, dear? Well, now, dearie.
I want a gin.
Gin for the lady. What's your name, dearie?
Gertie.
Gertie.
Aye.
Is it you, Gertie? Pick up. Well now, dearie.
Is your name Drew?
Is that what you want my name to be?
I'm looking for Mr. Drew. Mr. Drew, is there a Mr. Drew?
Yes.
Oh, now, Gertie, I'm the one who's bought you the gin.
Yes, my name is Drew.
You ain't the Drew I'm looking for.
Well, now, why do you say that?
Here now, lad. I'm the fellow who's bought her the gin.
Here's a guinea, my lad. Find another lady who likes gin.
Oh, oh, I will, that governor. Thank you. Bye, Gertie.
Oh.
Oh, now, why do you weep, pretty one?
You're so beautiful. Always crying, beautiful thing.
Gin for the lady. Now, stop that weeping. Here's your gin. I say, mischievous wink you have.
That truly your name?
Truly, Lady Bird, it is.
Lady Bird.
And you were looking for me?
Lady Bird.
My name is Drew, and you shouted for Mr. Drew.
So beautiful you are.
What do you want of me?
I've a letter for a man named Drew.
Really?
Oh, I want you, David. I really do.
Then give it to me.
You must turn your back now.
Right you are.
Yeah. You are a conniver, you are.
His name really was Drew. Timothy Drew. It's one of those coincidences in history which gave rise to the old saw, truth is stranger than fiction, as they say. And he was a curious man, and a proud man, jealous of his name, Drew. He had heard his name mentioned, and he was forced to find out why. He read the letter then and there. He read it again, a little later, out loud, to the police.
And my missus told you have gone to London with Liz Bathall. But, Charlie, my lad, you shall pay me £20 a day, else I will tell that you have murdered your poor daddy. I have your paper, which you confessed you did, right where nobody but me knows where. So when my wife hands you this letter, you better give her money and find a way to keep it, giving it to her, your faithful servant, Mr. Walter Humphrey. Gentlemen, here in London is a man named Charles Drew. He has murdered his father, and he bears the same surname as I. I cannot permit this deed to go unpunished.
Even in 1739, the London police were thorough, and, goaded by the enormity of the crime and spurred and accompanied by a man whose name had been besmirched, they combed the alleys, hostelries, pubs, dens. It was late on a moist Thursday morning when Timothy Drew happened into Bonhomme Carter's Thorny Bull Inn on the corner of Asquith and Chiswick. Bonhomme Carter denied the presence of a Mr. Charles Drew, but affirmed that a Liz Bathall was most certainly a guest there. He directed Timothy to Liz's chambers.
Who is it?
Open the door.
No games, dear. It's too early. Who is it?
A representative of the police.
Why didn't you say?
May I come in?
If you be the police, you can do anything. Ain't that so?
Thank you.
I ain't done nothing.
Is your name Elizabeth Bathall?
It is.
Do you know a man named Charles Drew?
What's he look like?
I don't know.
Then how can I tell if I know him? Here. What sort do you take me for? There's no one in me closet.
What is this young man doing under your bed, madam?
Oh, a man? What's he...
Quiet, woman. Is your name Charles Drew? I'm talking to you under the bed there. Is your name Charles Drew?
Sir.
Come out from under there, sir.
That's right, sir.
My name is Charles Drew, sir.
And did you kill your father?
It would be a small life living as I have been. Yes. Yes, I killed my father.
I have the original issue of a Gazette dated January 22, 1740, from which I'd like to read. The melancholy proof that when a man has abandoned all religious principles and has suffered his depraved appetites and passions to govern his reason was shown yesterday when Charles Drew, Jr. was hanged in Long Melford. Since the hanging elm on Long Melford Road had recently been demolished to make a keel for the British Navy, a new gibbet was erected. This gibbet was equipped with a new mechanical device, invented by Mr. Douglas Langford of Eastbourne. Mr. Langford is to be congratulated.
Again is Thomas Highland.
Next week, the office directly below that occupied by Oliver Wendell Holmes is the scene of a catastrophe. The place, Harvard Medical School. The time, 1849. My report, on the terrible deed of Dr. Webster. Thank you. Good night.
Crime Classics on Tuned to Yesterday, a CBS radio broadcast, the third in a series of about 52 episodes, first heard on July 6, 1953. At the time, it was part of CBS Radio's Monday night lineup at 8. This is an hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for Gangbusters with a case of the supersonic safecrackers, heard on ABC on December 6, 1947.
Gangbusters! Gangbusters, presented in cooperation with police and federal law enforcement departments throughout the United States. The only national program that brings you authentic police case histories.
Supersonic safecrackers, whose leader thought he could outwit New York detectives by use of scientific methods, but who learned that to a woman there is nothing so unscientific as a slap in the face.
And now to Gangbusters and facts that show the operation of our law enforcement officials in their war against the underworld. Gangbusters has asked the Honorable John J. Sullivan, former Chief of Detectives and Deputy Police Commissioner, City of New York, to narrate by proxy tonight's case.
The inside facts in the case of the supersonic safecrackers.
Chief Sullivan, I know the criminals in tonight's case certainly presented a problem to detectives of the New York City Police Department.
A tremendous problem, Don Gardner. But they gave the investigating detectives an idea of what their successors may have to face in the future.
Well, it sounds like you've got an interesting case, Chief Sullivan. Why don't you go right ahead?
All right, Don. On the west side of New York, a little uptown from Times Square, there was a cheap restaurant, a chili parlor, in the basement of an old brownstone house. Miguel, the Mexican proprietor, on occasion prepared his peppery native dishes for special customers. One such customer was Russ Enfield, who, on a particular night about a year and a half ago, sat at a corner table with his girl, Myra, as Miguel took their order.
Then I fix you some nice enchiladas, which we follow up with some nice cheese tacos, see?
Fine, fine. That's the stuff, Miguel.
Can't you make something simple, like ham and eggs?
Ham and eggs? This is poison, ham and eggs.
Go on, Miguel. Go on, go on. Whip the stuff up.
Whip this stuff up? Well, this cannot be whipped up like ham and eggs,
brother. Russ.
Now, look, Myra, it's all settled. You got enough clothes. You can't have it.
You know, huh? You know what I need.
Yeah, I know what you need. Now, let's forget about it.
Russ, I swear I'm not going to stand for this pushing around. There's certain things a girl's entitled to.
If you don't keep quiet about it, I'll give you what you're entitled to. Now, don't let's start it. Uh-oh. Comes Jonesy and the guy.
Hooray. Where's his turtleneck sweater?
All right, all right. Now, keep quiet.
Well, here we are, Russ.
Hello, Jonesy. Gee, you look sweet tonight.
Yeah. No, I just got a haircut.
Okay, okay. You're Preble, huh?
That's right.
Joe Preble, Russ Enfield.
Come on, Jonesy. Hi. Let's go over to the bar and have a drink.
Is it okay, Russ?
Well, sure, sure. Go ahead. I want to talk to Preble.
Take care of my enchiladas.
Yeah, I'll see they don't get cold.
Come on, Myra.
Those enchiladas couldn't get cold in Siberia.
Have a chair, Preble.
Thanks. Cute kid.
She's just like the rest of them. No, Preble?
Sounds okay to me, Russ. The way Jonesy explained it.
Well, Jonesy's not the best explainer in the world. Have any questions?
What kind of questions? Safe cracking is safe cracking.
With a few improvements, yeah. For instance, you don't have to carry that gun anymore.
Who told you I'm carrying a gun?
Nobody told me. I just found out now. You carry it in a shoulder holster under your left arm. Right?
And whose mind you been reading?
I haven't been reading any minds. Just a dial on this little gimmick.
It's a funny-looking watch. What is it, anyway?
Just a little gimmick I picked up. They used them in the war. Metal detector.
Oh, cute. Cute as they come. But how does it open a safe?
Might come in handy, just like everything we use. The walkie-talkies, the supersonic stuff, everything.
You gotta show me that it beats the old way.
You've been on ice too long, Preble. You got a Sing Sing complex. Now remember what I tell you about the gadgets we work with. The scientific stuff can only go so far. Can't even go that far without a little head work.
Okay, just lay it out.
Now hold it, hold it.
Senor Russ, you would like the tortillas plain or toasted? A toasted, I think, yes.
Anything, Miguel. Just get it out here.
I see, toasted. A toasted will be more better tonight because it's yesterday's tortillas.
He should drown in a barrel of tequila.
Well, Preble, you think you could come along and do what I tell you without giving me any argument?
Look, I've been knocking the knobs off safes 15 years now.
I can use your experience, but my methods are a little different.
How do you come to be such an expert in this science stuff?
The Navy, pal. The Navy taught me the works before they gave me the bounce.
Oh, another blue ticket, boy.
Yeah, after a hitch in Portsmouth Naval Prison. I've got my hands on every electronic device in the book, and I know how to run them. I can open up any tin can of a vault in this town without straining a muscle. I'll show you what I mean.
Now, you heard there was fortunes being made out of government surplus.
The surplus anybody can get, Preble. It still takes a guy to run it.
Here comes Agua Caliente with your grub.
Good, good. Let's eat.
All right, it's very hot stuff, senores. You don't put your fingers
up. Well, you think you could crack this safe the old-fashioned way, Preble?
I might. Come on, Russ. How long does it take to get that junk rigged up?
Yeah. Plug this in the wall socket. There.
The old-fashioned way ain't good enough. Now you gotta crack a safe with gadgets.
Finger the combination, Preble.
Yeah, now you're talking.
Okay, hold it. One tumbler dropped.
Did not. I didn't hear it drop. I got the best ears in the business.
It dropped, I tell you, and the gadget told me it did.
No kidding.
I'll run the dial back the other way. Easy.
Yes, sure. Hey, what's that?
Shut up. What is it, Jonesy?
Keep the light lower, Russ. I got a glimmer of her from the window just now.
Right. Keep that light lower, Preble.
Yeah.
Any radio cars around, Jonesy?
Not a sign of one, Russ. How you doing?
Okay, but we won't get it open if I talk to you all night. You just stay in the car. Keep your eyes out for cops.
Okay.
Hey, that's all right. The walkie-talkie's okay.
I know it. Well, go on, get to work in that combination.
Sure.
Want to grab that dough and get out of here.
5 feet 8 1/4, 31, 160 pounds. Investigation of homicide.
Look, Captain Hanson, I hate to break in on the lineup like this.
Sergeant, what's up?
Just had a call from the 32nd Squad.
Face the left, Johnson.
They got into the vault at a finance company office at 124th and Lexington last night. Got away with over 3,000.
Does it look like the same boys, Sergeant?
No telling.
Come on, let's get up there.
All right.
Ryan from Identification's on the way up there now to dust the place over for prints.
Good.
Walk off the way you came on.
Go ahead, Sergeant.
Yeah. Car is parked outside, Captain. We can...
Oh, Sergeant.
Yes, sir?
You say they fingered this safe open?
That's what the 32nd Squad says.
One of those boys must have awfully tender fingers.
Probably took them all night manipulating that combination, just like that one last week, Captain. They could have blown the door off in an hour.
Well, I don't know, Sergeant. Maybe these boys have a way.
A way? What do you mean, a way?
We'll see. Let's get up there and look that vault over.
Hey, Russ, I...
Oh, hello, Jonesy.
Oh, hi, Myra. It's, Russ around?
Sure, he's in there sleeping. He's got a night job, remember?
I guess I'll come back later.
What's your rush, handsome? You can wait, and you don't have to wait standing up.
Okay. Thanks, Myra.
Not over there. Sit down here.
Over there? Okay, if you don't mind.
Jonesy.
Yeah, Myra?
Remember at the bar last night I was telling you about that dress?
Yeah, sounds nice.
You couldn't let me have another 200, could you?
Well...
I know I owe you so much already, but you'll get it back, every cent.
Well, it's not the dough, Myra.
You've got the 200, haven't you?
Yeah, sure, I've got it, but...
But what?
Look, I told you before, Russ wouldn't like me giving you money. You know he wouldn't...
You don't have to be afraid of Russ. I wouldn't tell him anything about you and me. I'd like to get that dress today, Jonesy.
Okay. You can have your 200.
Oh, Jonesy. I knew you wouldn't let me down. I just knew it.
Myra, you belong to Russ now. Russ is a good-looking guy. He can talk and...
And what?
Skip it. You got the papers around in your place? Maybe they got something in about the job
last
night. Oh,
no, don't. Don't you think... Oh.
Hello, Jonesy.
Oh, hi, Russ.
Well, what's on your mind, Jonesy?
Nothing important, Russ. I just want to tell you 8 o'clock is okay with Preble. He'll meet us at the chili parlor.
8 o'clock's fine.
Yeah, good.
Did he say anything about last night's job?
Did he? He's really sold on this scientific stuff. Really sold. I think I better run along.
What's your hurry?
Well, I've got something to do.
You got some coffee brewing, Jonesy.
No, thanks. See you tonight at the chili parlor, huh?
So long, Jonesy.
Bye.
Well, did you have a nice nap?
Lay off Jonesy, will you, Myra?
What are you talking about?
Well, anybody can see the guy goes for you like a ton of bricks. You've been taking dough off him again.
So what? If you won't give it to me, I'm entitled to go looking.
Look all you want, baby, but just stay away from my boys. Want them to keep their mind on business.
What do you think you are, giving me orders?
I'll show you who I think I am.
Let go.
Now stop playing with Jonesy. I'll start on you, and I won't be playing.
Kevin Hanson talking.
Oh, Captain. Sergeant Keel. Look, I'm with the chief engineer of the Euclid Safe Manufacturing.
Well, what does he have to say?
Nobody, he says. Nobody could open that new safe of theirs without blowing the door off.
Did you tell him he was wrong?
Did I? And I showed him the pictures, too. He still says that new model safe combination has silent tumblers and nobody could hear them drop. He says it looks like an inside job, and I'm about ready to believe him.
Is there any way at all to open that safe without the combination?
Just a minute, I'll ask him. Is there any way to open that safe without the combination? The captain wants to know.
It can only be done with a listening device.
With a what? Yeah. He says they tested it, Captain, and the only way it could be done was you could hear the tumblers drop if you had a supersonic listening device.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting, Captain. But what kind of a burglar carries a supersonic, whatever you call it?
I don't know, Sergeant, but come on back to the office. We'll see if we can find out.
So, Don, as the gang of criminals led by Russ Enfield prepared to extend their scientific safe-cracking venture still farther, New York City detectives had obtained their first inkling to their method of operation. It was the beginning of a long trail that didn't end until the threat of death lurked on both sides of a skyscraper's skylight.
Now, back to Gangbusters. You were telling us, Chief Sullivan, that the criminal Russ Enfield led his gang in a number of successful safe crackings by using such modern instruments as supersonic listening devices and walkie-talkie apparatus to warn of approaching trouble.
That's right, Don. And New York City detectives had an idea of what was going on and were proceeding with their investigation. One night shortly before starting on a safe burglary they had planned, Russ Enfield had just finished dinner with his confederates and the girl Myra at the chili parlor the gang patronized.
Listen, Russ, boss or no boss, this is the last time I go for this Mexican food. Can kill you.
Yeah, it's like olives. You gotta learn to like this stuff.
And you will if you got a stomach left.
What's the matter with Mexican food? I like it.
Okay, Jonesy, it's getting late. Drive Myra home, will you?
Yeah, Russ, sure.
Yeah, I thought you were taking me on this one.
A dame's place is home.
Who asked you?
Come on home, will you?
Come on, Myra.
Now hurry back here, Jonesy. Preble and I will have the whole thing gone over.
Yeah. Well, have a good time, boys. Go, Jonesy.
Yeah, sure.
Toodaloo.
I'll see you later, Jonesy.
Yeah. I got the car parked right outside, Myra.
That's sweet of you, Jonesy.
Look, Myra, I want to talk to you.
Now,
about...
wait. Wait till we get outside.
Okay. I'll get the door.
Hey, buenas noches.
Night, Miguel. Got warmer.
Yeah.
Where's the car?
It's right there. Look, Myra, I...
Yeah.
Your new dress looks nice on.
Does it? Glad you like it.
Oh, wait a minute, Myra. When is the payoff going to be?
Jonesy, I told you you could get it back every cent. 800, isn't it?
When a guy gives dough to a dame, she means something to him, Myra.
Oh, Jonesy, you mean something to me, too, but... I'm scared. I'm scared of Russ.
Well, I'm not scared. Come here.
Oh, Jonesy, please.
Myra.
Jonesy, if Russ ever
Hello,
caught...
Hello, kids. You having a good time?
Yeah, Russ. An awful good time.
What's the idea?
No, wait a minute, Russ. Don't get thinking anything, because we
Shut
don't...
Shut up.
Come on, Russ. If you want to argue about it, I'm willing to argue. If you think I ought to get socked, try it.
You're not going to get hit, Jonesy. Not you.
Hey, now, wait a minute.
Wait, nothing, Myra. I told you to cut this out.
Russ, no, don't...
You hadn't ought to have done that, Russ.
She had it coming.
Did I?
I said you hadn't ought to have done that, Russ.
Come on, Myra, grab a cab and get home.
I'll take her home.
You'll do what I tell you. Come on, Myra, start walking.
Don't you ever lay a hand on me again.
You didn't have to hit her, Russ.
Now, you listen to me, Jonesy. Myra's no dame for you. If you want a girl, go get somebody else.
Ain't that up to Myra?
It's up to me. I came out to tell you to pick up an extra 20-foot extension cord for that job tonight. I get it before we start something that we can't finish.
Yeah. An extra 20-foot extension cord.
Well, get going. We haven't got all night. Don't worry about Myra. I'll take care of her.
Let me get this straight, Commander. You say these are all the types of supersonic listening devices that are Navy equipment?
That's right, Captain Hansen. There are two or three other types, later developments, but they're still secret.
They all look pretty bulky. Except this one portable job.
The Army had some types of their own, you know.
Yes, I know. I've checked with the Army.
That one's sensitive enough to enable a man using it to hear the tumblers in the safe combination drop. I've heard of instances where it was used during the war by the OSS and intelligence on certain missions in occupied territory, and quite successfully, too.
I don't suppose these devices have too many industrial uses.
No, Captain, not too many. It wouldn't be too difficult to trace all sales of them through the War Assets Administration.
Well, when I leave here, Commander, that's exactly where I'm going.
Come on, Myra, come on, open up this door.
Right,
open up or I'll push it in.
Push it in, who cares?
You're all right. I'm gonna be bothered.
All right, what do you want?
What are you packing for? Where are you going?
I decided a long time ago. No guy's going to slug me and then have me sit around and take his abuse.
You'll sit around as long as I want you around.
Hand me that pair of shoes. They go in, too.
Listen to me.
Hey!
You hang that stuff back in the closet or I'll give you a going over. You'll never forget.
Jonesy will have something to say about that.
I told you to stay away from Jonesy.
Russ, you just...
You'll do what I tell you. You'll stay away from Jonesy. Get that through that head of yours. Now go on, hang that stuff up.
All right. You put it that way.
Yes, sir. Step right in. Yes, sir. What can I do for you?
I understand you handle a lot of war surplus.
He understands I handle a lot of war surplus. Mister, this store handles so much war surplus, I'm thinking of starting my own army. What would you like? We got pup tents, jeep tents, barrack tents, sailor suits, soldier suits, diver suits.
Okay. Have you got any portable supersonic listening devices?
If we got any portable supersonic listening devices, sure, we got them. Right this way.
Thanks.
Telling you we got a portable supersonic listening device the likes of which you've never seen. And they've been going like hotcakes, too. Everybody wants one, everyone.
Yeah?
Sure. We run them in, run them out by the carload. Hey, take a look at this little number.
My name is Sergeant Keogh, Safe and Loft Squad.
Oh. Well, you don't say. You're sergeant, huh?
That's right. How many of these things did you buy from the War Assets Administration?
Let me see. 10, I think. But they came with a job lot of other merchandise. 10.
And they've been going like hotcakes?
Well, not exactly. I sold one.
One. Do you remember who bought it?
Do I remember who bought it? I never forget a customer. Maybe sometimes I can't remember the face, but I never forget a customer. We got a record someplace. I'll go in back and see what I can find out. Now, if you want to look around some of our fine merchandise for your own use, go ahead. Don't touch nothing, though, will
you? No, thanks. I think I'll just go in back and help you look.
And then he hit you again, huh?
Yeah. But that's not the worst part of it, Jonesy. Like now, I can't even go to the beauty parlor without an escort.
I'd like to help you, Myra, but what's the use? There's nothing in it for me. You just run back to Russ.
I hate him, Jonesy. You don't know how much I hate him.
Then what are you sticking with him for?
I'm scared. I'm scared to death he'll kill me. Jonesy. There is a way.
A way for what?
For you and me.
I thought you were scared of Russ.
Suppose there was no Russ to be scared of.
Now, wait a minute.
Listen to me, Jonesy. That's safe tonight. There ought to be 12,000-15,000 in it.
So?
You and I could do a lot with 15,000, Jonesy. An awful lot.
Yeah, maybe we could.
Russ told me he's taking both you and Preble up into the place with him. I'm going to stay in the car.
What about Preble?
He don't mean nothing to you, does he?
Not much, no.
Okay, then.
Okay, what?
When the safe gets open and you've got the money, that's the time.
Both of them? I don't know.
Well, you don't have to, you know. If you can do without me.
Oh, now, look, Myra.
But if you don't kill him, Jonesy, we'll never get a chance, you and me. Never. Think of it. 15,000.
Yeah, Myra. Yeah, I want that chance.
Captain Hansen.
Oh, Captain. Sergeant Keogh.
Oh, yes, Sergeant. How'd you make out?
Well, it looks like this Russ Enfield's the guy, Captain. Got a pair of hoodlums for sidekicks. One of them's Joe Preble. Just finished 7 to 12 in Sing Sing.
Good. I want them tailed, Sergeant. I want a man tailing each one of them every minute. Let's get him in the act of committing one of these safe burglaries.
How about it, Sergeant? Been able to raise the captain?
They're ringing him now.
Captain Hanson.
Sergeant Keogh, Captain. Talking from a call box on the corner of 93rd and 2nd. Russ Enfield and both his sidekicks just now broke into a building here.
Oh, what about the girl?
She's waiting in a car. And look, Captain. There's a finance company on the top floor of that building. That's probably what they're after.
Have you got help on the way?
Yes, sir. Plenty.
Okay, grab them as they come out.
Right, sir.
And I'm on my way. I'll be there as soon as I can. So long.
Captain's on his way, Riley.
Good.
Now, look, that office is on the top floor. And if I remember, most of these buildings around here have got skylights.
Want to go up and have a look?
Yeah, the watchman at that loft next door let us up, and we can cut over his roof.
Okay.
We'll tell Gordon to get the men posted as soon as they get here. Let's go.
Jonesy, we've been here long enough. Come on, let's get packed up and going. Preble?
I'm set. You know, Russ, I wouldn't be surprised if that adds up to 15 grand.
Yeah, we'll see what it adds up to when we count it. Now, come on, get that stuff together.
Russ.
What?
Myra told me you hit her again.
What business that of yours?
It's my business, all right.
Is it?
I told you, you hadn't ought to go around hitting people, especially Myra.
Oh, forget it. Get that stuff together.
Sorry, Russ, but Myra said you don't move, Russ.
Hey, what's the idea?
You too, Preble. Up. Up.
Yeah. Put that gun up, you dope, before I get you.
Well, hey. All right, hands up, both of you.
Okay, don't shoot.
Drop that gun.
Okay, don't shoot.
Yeah, yeah.
Not me, you don't get. Stop, you. Halt. Not me, you don't get.
Right, Russ.
Now, look,
Copper,
just take it easy.
We got him, Sergeant.
All right.
There wasn't any sense running, Russ. All right. You might have gotten yourself killed. Scientific mind like yours should have reasoned we'd have every exit covered. Okay, turn around and walk back to the safe. We want to look that job over.
That done was how Russ Enfield and his gang learned that not even a clever application of up-to-date scientific instruments can beat the law. They were all sentenced to long terms, which they are now serving in various New York state penitentiaries.
Well, I was amazed, Chief Sullivan, that such equipment as supersonic listening devices could be purchased by burglars.
Well, they can't anymore, Don. Because of requests by law enforcement officials and for other reasons, the sale of supersonic equipment was frozen by the War Assets Administration several months ago.
Well, thank you, Chief Sullivan, for this extraordinary case history. And congratulations to all the New York City detectives who had a hand in breaking up this dangerous gang of safe burglars. Leading roles were played by Chuck Webster, Elspeth Eric, and Bill Zuckert. Don Gardner speaking. Gangbusters is a Phillips H. Lord production.
Gangbusters, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 6th of December, 1947 on ABC. And so closes this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for tuning in.